Hey, everybody. As we get further and further into this, I thought I would share what businesses I think are great for those with dyslexia. Some work for us, some don't. And I'll tell you why, what to steer clear of. Some people don't want to start a business, they want to buy one. Some of them want to know what companies are just a flash in the pan. So let's dive into some of my thoughts. It's just a bit of a random session. And I'd love to know if you agree with me. You can always answer that on Spotify or send us a message on truthaboutdyslexia.com. So let's get into today's episode. Okay, so just a quick thought. You know, I'm really enjoying doing these podcasts about business. I'm really passionate and energetic about it. It's interesting, when I think of topics for Truth About Dyslexia, the things that make me the most passionate to speak about are when someone's told me their story, the problem they have, and I'm replying to somebody to help them. That's one thing. And two is a topic that's about me, you know, something I want to talk about. If I want to talk about dyslexia in business and I'm passionate about it, my podcast is so much better. When I get caught trying to think about what is something people might be thinking about, I get into my dyslexic mind and start to create problems others have. That doesn't work because I'm talking about something that isn't front of my mind, isn't in my energy flow, whatever you want to call it. You know, it's not there. So I just thought I'd share that note because it's very true about a lot of stuff, right? If we're doing something that's out of our flow, it is really draining and it doesn't work as well. You don't get the same results, whereas it can be the opposite if we get it right. So onto this podcast about different businesses that I think are right for neurodiverse people. So the first one I think is a no, is a franchise. Now, people might be thinking, well, franchise gets all the organization sorted of a business. And it actually proves the model. It does all of this good stuff. And it makes it easy to operate. Now, you might be thinking, that'll be perfect for someone who's unorganized, potentially dyslexic. But what I see a lot of the times, and I've worked with a bunch of franchise owners, is that many dyslexics who try and go into a franchise situation. So this is a business, if you don't know much about it, is a business that is purchased off someone else, and there are multiple ones around the place. This could be a McDonald's, could be a Taco Bell, Chipotle. I don't know why I'm just thinking of food things. This is nearly dinner time here, so it's probably why it's going through my head. But what I've seen a lot is when dyslexics or neurodiverse people buy into these franchises is they want to put their own creativity on it. So they start trying to work outside the lines they're given. And if you've ever worked with a franchise, you know they don't want you being creative. The whole brand is about not being creative. It's about McDonald's, you know. McDonald's are not creative. They don't come up with things randomly. It's all very well thought out. All the creatives are sitting in head office. You as a business owner are not the creative in that area. So franchises, if you've got a lot of money and you want to invest in them and someone else runs them, great. But if you're going to be starting out, buying a business, franchises can be very limited to your creative potential. Now, I'm welcome to be challenged on that, but I've seen this go wrong. I've seen people get kicked out of franchises because they started to do things their way, because their way was better. And don't get me wrong, probably was better, but you know, a lot of us with dyslexia can't always see the cause and effect issue. And if one person changes something in a franchise of 100, 1,000, 5,000 businesses, it doesn't really work well. It doesn't work well because it's not, sadly, all about us, right? So that's where franchises don't work. What does work? So something I do really like is when I see a dyslexic creator start a service-based business from home, where they don't have to just quit their day job straight away. They can start off by dabbling a little bit. A lot of us try and jump in too quickly into ideas. And I said this in a couple of podcasts ago, is we don't usually give things a try. We're like all in, you know, here's all our chips. Let's, you know, we're either going to win or we're going to lose. You know, that's how we go. And many dyslexics go straight in. And where it works a lot better is where you can dabble a bit. You can actually build some true life experience because that's how we learn as dyslexics, by experiencing stuff, getting our hands dirty. If I said go drive that digger over there, you wouldn't go pick up a 300-page manual and read it. you'd jump on the thing, probably knock someone out, but you'd give it a go, right? That's what you'd do. That's how you'd learn. And very quickly you'd learn that pedal does this, this does that. A little bit longer, you get better and better. So what I do say is, if you can, the good thing about service businesses is many of them don't cost a huge amount to set up. The overheads aren't what they used to be. You can create a website, get a brand, incorporate a company in many places. I know New Zealand is very good. Other countries are a bit different, of course. But, you know, you can start a business relatively easily in the grand scheme of life. And you can start something small. You can work in finding your first client. You can offer your services discounted for the first 10 clients. And you can learn by trying. When you get feedback, you can improve. And that's one of the ways dyslexics are so good at business, is we are very quick to iterate on a feedback loop. You know, when someone gives us feedback, the first thing we do is work out how to fix the problem. And if we get good at putting that problem fix into a system, then we build very good businesses. Now, where that goes wrong is if we try and do all of that ourselves without help, it does fall over a bit. But it doesn't mean we don't solve those problems. So even if our service businesses can take a while to scale, or we have to go through many iterations or many builds and breaks, we do get there in the end. And as we start to realize we can trust learning other people, or we can trust other team members to help us, even if we do struggle to communicate with them a bit. You know, my team who I work with are amazing. How they interpret some of the terrible communication from me is beyond me. But they're lovely people. They take time. They understand the good things and the bad things about me. And over the years, I've learned to not get grumpy, not get as angry, you know, in the moment. When something happens, I don't put all my energy into an explosion. I sit back and say, will I have this problem next year? Will I even remember what was happening today? And the answer is usually no. So why get angry about it? It's not life-changing. So again, it's another podcast, but you know, all of these things have to be taken into account with business because, you know, it's a big decision. It's a big risk that you could be undertaking. The other thing I would say around picking a business, and it's not about the type, but it is about partnerships. Now, I've had a few of these over the years, and if you ask 10 different people, they'll give you 10 different answers here. It really is based on the experience that they have had. But business partnerships, in my opinion, work better than not. Because in the grand scheme of it, you will never work as hard as the business owner. The business owner anywhere will work their bum off to get things done because it's their asset. It's their thing they're building. So if you have one business owner and three staff, the business owner is always going to do the most. That's just how it works. You know, you're always going to do that little bit extra. And so it's really important to make sure you have enough capability there. You know, I've seen some great companies where there are three business owners in the company, and they all have three different skills. Maybe one's a salesperson. Maybe one is an operations person. Now, I've seen both of these people be very neurodiverse. There are a lot of operationally slightly autistic people that are amazing. They just come up with systems, can see amazing stuff. You've got salespeople who are great orators and speakers, usually terrible with detail, but great speakers. And then maybe there's a third person who's more of the doer, maybe the less neurodiverse person who just plods along. In my business, I've got someone called Nina. She is amazing. And she just keeps the wheels ticking, doesn't complain, just keeps going. And she's brilliant at it. She's grown over the years, gotten better and better, and absolutely love her for everything she does in our company. But you've got to find these different people that work with you, they learn to work with you, and they know you. And it's just game-changing. Get the right people, any business can work. But what I see a lot is people don't do that straight away. So if you've never owned a business, whichever company you decide to buy, make sure you're passionate about what it's about. Now, some people might give you an opposite thing to that, but I think it's important to have some passion in it or some interest, because I will guarantee you there will be days where you go, why did I buy this business or why did I start this business? There will be days early on where you look at the job pages going, I think I should just get a job. And that happens a lot in the early years. You're like, why am I doing this to myself? And you have to keep pulling yourself back from the brink. So all of this stuff is happening. If you don't have passion for what you're doing, you are going to cross that line pretty quickly at some point. If you're selling doilies to old grandmothers, and no offense to grandmothers, they need doilies. I don't actually know what a doily is, but I've heard it before, so I thought I'd mention it. It's a terrible example. Please bear with me on that one. But, you know, it's like, it's kind of like, you know, you need the passion to keep going when times get tough. It is the only way to carry on. It's the only way to keep succeeding. So make sure you've got something with a bit of skin in the game. I'd also recommend, again, starting small. Don't risk the farm in your first attempt. If you can work out how to set up a business for a couple of grand, and you can say, if I lost this tomorrow, the world wouldn't end, you know, that's a good part about it. That's a good thing. Try it. Build a, you know, work with a web design company or build one yourself. Whatever it is, just get started with something. Test it out. Create something terrible. Most people usually start by hacking something together themselves. And then a few years down the track, when they've got a bit more budget, they'll go to a professional to help them. That's absolutely fine. But do it without risking everything you've built or you've got. And then realize as well, as you move forward, ask for help. You don't have to hold out. You don't have to do it all yourself. But it takes time to get to that level. What other businesses? Before I go today, I just know the podcast, I keep looking at the time. I don't want to make these too long. I want to hold your attention. That is my goal. Is what are the businesses? So I'd also really say the other thing I do see and the last thing I see is a lot of neurodiverse people going into businesses that are hands-on, that involve you moving and doing something. You know, I enjoyed building websites or designing stuff and creating visuals. I really love it. I love the hands-on nature of talking to customers and inspiring them and letting my brain do its best work. I see a lot of neurodiverse people in the trades, the plumbers, the builders, the ones that are spatial thinkers that can see around the corner of things without even opening their eyes. So try and do something that works to your strengths, not against it. You don't want to be like accounting auditors may not be your ideal place in life. People that have to do things on repeat may not be the place, be the thing that you want to do in your life. It's just not likely. So that's all I wanted to share today, guys. I hope that's got you thinking. I know I haven't given you lots of exact businesses, but I've given you things to think about for perspective's sake. And I hope you can value that and enjoy it. If there's any other ideas for podcasts you have, send them in to me at truthaboutdyslexia.com and have an excellent rest of your day.